You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Hearst Ranch. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable, native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, go to HearstRanch.com. Welcome to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. And this is episode 90 of this show. 90, that's a lot. 90 of them in the can. Well, I guess it's radio, it's not really in the can. 90 on the drive, since it's digital. I still say in the can. It's more appropriate for a food show. So last night, I went to my weekly swim class. I take this swim class once a week. And this swim class is held in New York's nastiest pool. I've been going there now for about a year and a half. And I've been to some other pools in New York, a lot of them. And this one really still is New York's nastiest pool. It's in the basement of Masaryk Towers, which are these low-income housing project buildings on the Lower East Side. If you go to Delancey Street and walk east, and then right before you fall in the river, you stop, that's where it is. It's at Delancey and Sheriff Street. I mean, did you ever even know there was a Sheriff Street? Unless you live way down there. Sheriff Street? Who knew? It's past Attorney Street. Anyway, if you did fall in the river, you'd probably have a better experience because the water in the river is probably cleaner than the water in that pool. When I first started going there and I first saw the pool, my first thought was like, back when I was a little kid watching the Olympics, like in the 70s, like the 76 or the 80 Olympics, they would show these little documentaries about the Eastern Europeans training. And they always showed them training in these really kind of grim Soviet-era places. That's this pool. This pool is where the Bulgarian swim team would have trained in 1980. That's what it feels like. But I go there because I like the coach and I like the classes. The classes are run by Jack Rabbit, the running shop. The price is right. And I like it. It sort of forces me to get in the pool and swim for an hour. And in between, you know, laps and drills and all this time in there, it gives me like time to think. It like puts me in a situation where I can think, you know, about drowning, but also about things, kind of relax my brain a little bit. And a while ago, I actually did a show that sort of came to me one night while I was swimming in the class. And it was my show about how cooking is fundamentally really just about removing water from food. And that kind of came to me between kicking drills or something. So I come up with these ideas while I'm in the class. And most of the people in the class are triathletes in training, people who do triathlons. And I took the class originally just because I wanted to be a better swimmer. I didn't realize that it was like a tri-training zone there. But I kind of started to get like sucked into the idea of doing a tri. What I didn't know at the time was like, there are really, really short tries. Like it's not, you know, you don't run a marathon and then swim 10 miles. It's like short, like swim a quarter mile, run a 5K, easy, short stuff. So there was a try on Staten Island over the weekend called the Pancake that, I was going to do. I was going to sign up for it and I was going to do it, but then, oh, luckily I got sick. So I didn't have to do it. And also, luckily, because I didn't really train for it at all, I just talked about doing it, but I never actually trained. So it's probably good that I didn't do it. And so a couple of people in the class had done it, and they were talking about it last night, and they said that the water was freezing cold and really rough. And a friend of mine who did it said that she was, like, pushing garbage out of the way in the water while she swam. I mean, it is in the harbor off of Staten Island. Sure, there are some lovely beaches on Staten Island, but I don't want to be swimming in the garbage. But anyway, one of my pals in the swim class had done it, and we were talking, and, you know, she said because it was so cold and so choppy, She was really, really glad she had her wetsuit on, because when you wear a wetsuit, it makes you more buoyant, because wetsuit material is, you know, made up of a billion trillion tiny little bubbles trapped in foam, and it makes you more buoyant. And so she said that wearing that wetsuit was what got her through. And, you know, you wear a wetsuit that it's like a shorter, like thinner wetsuit. It's not like full scuba. It's more like what surfers wear. It's sort of a skin to protect your skin. I have a full length scuba wetsuit, which would not have been appropriate. It's too thick and it's too tight. And, you know, it's designed for depth and minimal swimming. When you dive down 60 feet, the water pressure compresses you and you want a thick, tight suit to kind of squeeze around you. You don't want that when you're doing a try. But anyway, she said she was really glad about the suit because they increase your buoyancy, and that really helped her. You can rent those suits, by the way. You don't have to buy them, although I thought it might actually be really funny if I showed up in my full scuba gear for a triathlon, like fins and all. I'm sure I would have been disqualified. But anyway, so what does this have to do? Well, we're getting to the food part of the show. You know, it always takes me a while to get there. So I was thinking about all this as I was swimming my laps and thinking about tight skins and how wrapping things up nice and tight and compressing them, you know, makes in the water, it makes you sleeker and more aquadynamic or hydrodynamic. And I was especially thinking about this because I had on a new bathing suit that was too small on me and it was really tight. And it was too small in a weird way. It was too small in the length. And if you've ever met me, I am 4'11". So it's almost impossible for anything I wear to be too short in the length unless it's like made for like a 6-year-old. But this was definitely an adult suit, but it was too tight and too short. And I sort of felt all like scrunched up, like I felt like a little breakfast sausage in there, like all jammed into a casing. But it did make me faster in the pool. I had less drag. It made me think about the Olympics again, and like the last Olympics, they all were all wearing those Speedo Razor suits, those super high tech suits that have no drag, and they look like they paint them on the swimmers. That's something to think about, no drag at all. So that was all going through my head during last night's swim, post pancake triathlon. It's called the pancake because it's really flat, and then they serve pancakes at the end. I didn't do it. I didn't go. But if you ever do it, you get pancakes at the end. So that was last night. And then yesterday afternoon, I was at work. And, you know, I teach in a culinary school. And being the faculty of a culinary school means that 3 times a year, we have to have Faculty Development Day, which is supposed to be a day where we do some sort of activity that enriches us or teaches us something new. Usually, they don't really get it together. And we basically just do, like, boring bureaucratic stuff. But our development yesterday, part of the day, came in the guise, in the form of Sim Cass, who you may know as a listener from his time as a guest on the show. Sim Cass is the bread genius mastermind behind Balthasar Bakery's bread program. Sim designed all that. He's the Keith Richards of the bread world. He's this crazy Englishman, madman, bread genius. And so Sim is on the faculty, and he was asked to do a demo for the other faculty on the proper technique for forming baguettes. Now, half of the faculty are pastry and baking instructors, so they already knew how to do it. And I used to do a lot of baking and pastry, so I knew how to do it. But learning from Sim in itself is just infinitely entertaining. Just watching him and hearing him speak, you could, you know, he could read the phone book. You'd never get tired of it. So learning his secrets to baguette formation was kind of a glimpse into the madman behind the genius, or the genius behind the madman. Who knows which one. So we had this session with Sim where we made our baguettes. And in the basic baguette technique, and, you know, he talked about dough and fermentation and all the usual stuff. So when you make a baguette, you start out with a rectangle of dough that's, I'm going to say it's like 7 by 10. Like half the size of a sheet of standard paper. Yeah, about that big. And you hold it so the long side is, you know, parallel to the edge of your table. And it's like a series of folds. You sort of, you take like the top third and you fold it down. And then you fold that again down. You sort of fold it in thirds and you seal the seam. And then you roll it out. Seems pretty easy. But Sim kept talking about the skin. You want to really form the skin of the baguette. You want to form like a really tight, taut skin on the dough by really sealing and tucking and pressing in as you're folding and keeping the surface really, really taut. Because if you keep a tight skin on the dough, then when you put it in the oven, it's really going to hold its shape. And if you don't have any open seams, all that carbon dioxide, all those bubbles from the yeast will get trapped inside and you'll get a really nice rise. You'll get good oven spring. So it'll spring up instead of spreading out, which is what you want, and help make an excellent baguette. It's the same kind of thing if you're baking bread and you're making like a boule, like a round ball-shaped bread or a rounded loaf. You make sort of a cage out of your hands and you round the bread off by sort of rolling it around on the table inside your hand. So you're not really holding on to the bread. You're kind of pushing it around in a circle. And you let sort of the grippiness of the table grab onto it too. It's very interesting. You don't use a lot of flour because the flour will take away all your friction. And that creates a skin too. It's the same idea. You want to really pull that skin tight. Sort of like a wetsuit for the bread. And you trap in all that CO2 that the yeast has made, because that's what happens with bread. The yeast is in there and it's eating sugars and it's like farting away like crazy yeast. And you get bazillions of tiny bubbles from the carbon dioxide, and that's what happens. So if you make this really tight skin, you trap in all your yeast and you get really good rise on your bread. You get good oven spring. So we were talking about these skins with Sim, and we made our baguettes and then we put them in the oven and they came out pretty good, I have to say. Then we went and sat down and did all kinds of bureaucratic stuff and talked about our contract and talked about IT and all that kind of utterly boring stuff. But, you know, all in all, not a bad day. So we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back and talk more about skins. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Hearst Ranch. Welcome back to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Weitz, your host. And we're talking about skin tonight, skins and food. Talking about how wearing a really, really tight skin when you're swimming makes you aquadynamic, and how when you're forming a loaf of bread, it's all about tightening the outside of it up to make a really taut skin, so that when you bake the bread, everything stays snugly inside. And it seems to me like this theme started to evolve in my head, which is why I did the show about it this week, between the swim and the bread, that there was like this skin theme going on in my life this week, and about keeping things tucked and wrapped nice and tight, keeping things under wraps. I could have called the show that, but that was too easy. So today I was teaching in my current class. We're in our Asia module right now. And today was Asian dumpling and wrapped up things day. So I had to do a lot of demos because it's all this kind of, each thing is a specific technique and I have to demo how to form them and then how to cook them all. But I've taught the class, 300-400 times. So it's pretty easy. But I demoed things like xiaomai and potstickers and spring rolls and summer rolls. And we also made mandarin pancakes, which are those little kind of flat doughy pancakes that you get when you get mushu chicken or mushu pork or whatever mushu. Mushu's that like Chinese stir fry where everything's shredded up and you get those little tortilla-like pancakes that you wrap everything up in. So when you make that dough, it's basically a dough made out of flour and boiling water and salt, and that's it. And you make it, and then you let it rest, and then you portion it out into little balls, and then you have to roll them out. But before you roll them out, you have to round them off. And that's what I was just talking about in the last segment when we learned this bread-making technique with Sim. You have to round them out, and you have to get that nice, tight skim, but you have to make them into, like, a perfect little sphere. And you use that same technique where you cup it in your hand, and you make that little cage out of the palm of your hand. And so you sort of round it out on the table. You get this nice little sphere, and then you flatten them out, and you cook them off. So we were doing that with those today. And it's funny with bread, too, because you sort of want to form that tight skin as you're rolling. But you don't want to do anything to a bread dough that's going to allow a skin to form, or really like a crust. So you have to be really careful to keep your bread doughs covered all the time with something damp. You don't want that surface to dry out and crust before it goes in the oven, or you won't get good expansion because it'll be sealed up. So it was really important that we keep these all covered. And one of the teams, of course, in class today didn't do that. They left the bread dough just sitting in a bowl, and it got this nice thick crust building up on top of it, which we then had to pick off the raw dough crust before we could use it, even though I say to them, keep everything covered. So you have to do that either with like a damp towel or wrap it in plastic, or in the case of bread baking, you can put damp towels, or you can mist your bread with a mister before you put it in the oven. It's why when you bake bread in an oven, you steam it, you blast it with steam, because it dissolves the starch on the surface and allows for more expansion. It also helps to give you like a nice crackly crust. Like if you've ever seen a bread and the crust has like tiny little bubbles all over it, like blisters, that's from moisture. And that's what you want. It's all about that skin. Sometimes you want your skin to be crackly. Sometimes you don't. And then today we're also making spring rolls and Vietnamese summer rolls. And both of those involve skins also. And both need to be rolled up really, really tight, 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 tight. You got to roll them because you're keeping in fillings that are made up of all kinds of chopped up bits of things. So if you don't roll them up tight, then when you bite them or you cut them, everything falls out. It's like physics. No, it is physics. It's not like physics. You need, I guess it's physics. I didn't take physics, but I'm assuming. You need like all that external pressure of the wrapper to kind of hold everything together. So when you cut a cross section, the pressure keeps the filling in, right? That's physics, right, Jack? That's physics. He's not answering. And that's really all it is. It's like, you know, skin and physics. You want something that's going to be able to wrap tight enough to hold everything together. It's why something like a burrito is a big sloppy mess, but something like a spring roll or an egg roll holds together. Different kind of skin. The skin needs stretchability. You need to use wrappers or things that are pliant and pliable. So as you wrap with them, you can kind of pull them a little bit so that then they shrink back around it. You know what it's like? It's like an ace bandage. These wrappers are the ace bandages of food. Or they're kind of like Spanx, if you've ever experienced Spanx. I mean the undergarment, not the actual physical abuse. It's like that. So it's why things like Vietnamese rice paper or Thai wheat flour wrappers are really good for making these sort of things. Because they're stretchy and spongy. And they have this like ability to sort of stretch out and then shrink back around the filling and hold it all together. So it's cohesive. They're kind of weird though. Like the texture of them both is a little bit weird. I think they both they feel a little bit like dead skin in a way. The skins feel like dead skin. The rice paper ones have to be hydrated. They're really brittle at first, but then you rehydrate them and then you let them kind of dry out a little bit so they're tacky to the touch. And they feel like dead skin or like a discarded latex glove. That's what I say to my students, that after you hydrate them, they should feel like a latex glove. But they work beautifully. They work brilliantly to make all of these wraps. You just have to kind of understand the nature of the skin and how to work with it. So we're going to take another quick break so I can drink a little water and deal with my itchy throat, and we'll be back in a minute.
Following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune into The Food Scene Tuesdays at 3 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network. Hosted by Michael Harlan Turkel, photo editor of Edible Brooklyn and Edible Manhattan magazines, he'll further explore the amalgamation of food and art by talking to artists from a multitude of media. Guests will range from photographers, food stylists, interior architects for restaurants, industrial designers, all the players that make you want to eat with your eyes. Get ready to feast your ears every Tuesday at 3 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome back to Why We Cook, the Chef's Marty Pants radio show on Heritage Radio Network. Sorry, forgot where I was for a minute there. I'm Erica Wides, your host. And keep in mind, of course, that the wonderful world of social media is at your fingertips, and that if you like the show, you can find it on Facebook. Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network is on Facebook. I would love to hear from you. I've been getting some really great, interesting comments from people lately. It's been pretty cool to hear from people. I love that. I love the crematoria comment. You know who you are. That was great about the beans. Also, you can follow me on Twitter at Chef Smarty Pants. Follow me on Twitter. Who knew a year ago I would have even been saying that? Anyway, also, you can always find any of these shows on iTunes, and you can podcast them for free on iTunes. And on the Heritage Radio Network website, you can always listen to any show. You can listen to our live stream, and you can also leave us comments. There are so many options for you in getting in touch with us or just being a part of Heritage Radio. You have no excuse not to listen. So, there you go. Anyway, we're talking about skins, culinary and other skins tonight. The theme is the skin. The show tonight is called The Wunderskins. And so another culinary wunderskin you may not have ever thought about or worked with, but it's pretty cool stuff, is something called yuba, or tofu skin, or bean curd skin. Now, yuba is made by heating up soy milk, and then when the skin forms on the surface, it gets lifted off. I know it sounds a little gross. So have you ever heated up milk for something, like for a recipe, like you're making hot chocolate, or you need scalded milk, and you notice that a skin forms on the top? So that skin is coagulated proteins and lipids forming a film. And if you lift that off, you have that skin. So if you lift that off from soy milk and then dry it, that's what yuba is. And that's done. You can buy it in the fresh form. You can also buy it in packages in the dry form. And when you buy it dried, then you rehydrate it, and then you can use them like noodles or like wrappers. So it's pretty cool, because if you have people who can't eat wheat or don't want to eat wheat or don't want carbs for, you know, whatever reasons, you can use that instead. You can make dumplings out of it or things like that. And I like to hydrate it and then shred it up really thin and put it into noodle dishes, cold noodle dishes, or like into slaws. It's really good that way. But it definitely has a funny texture. I mean, of all the skins, it's the most skin-like yuba, I think. It's like a little bit rubbery. It's slippery. It's some funny stuff. It's kind of creepy, but creepy in a good way. Good creepy, not bad creepy. And, you know, a lot of Asian products kind of have that nature. They have a, they have like a jelliness or a slipperiness or a sponginess or a skin like texture. Things that as Westerners we don't really appreciate in our food because we don't really have those textures so much in our food. But once you've eaten them, you get used to them. They're really good. I mean, think of all the things. I mean, Jack and I were just talking before the show about cheese and how, you know, when he was a kid, he didn't appreciate cheeses that were really strong. But now he's sucking down all the strong blue cheeses that come his way. You know, we all grow up and learn to like new things. And something like Yuba, you'd have to try, you know, and get used to it. But it's not too offensive. It's pretty good. It's not like eating, you know, jellyfish or sea cucumbers, which takes some getting used to, or my least favorite food in the world, natto, which I've talked about here before, which is a fermented soybean product from Japan that is truly the most vile, inedible thing I've ever encountered. But you get used to all that stuff if you eat it enough. You know, people who grow up eating natto every day, they love it. Natto to the Japanese is sort of like Vegemite to the Commonwealth people, Vegemite or Marmite, also an inedible substance, in my opinion. But anyway, Yuba, sold fresh, sold dried. If you buy it dried, you can also get it, well, fresh or dried, you can get it bunched also, like bunched or bundled together. And then that gets fried up into pieces, and that gets used to make mock chicken for vegetarian Chinese cooking. So if you've ever had any of those mock proteins, like you go for vegetarian food and it's all like mock chicken, mock duck, mock. That's what the mock chicken is. I've always wondered, if you're a vegetarian and you're going out of your way to eat vegetarian food, why do you want food that are, that's a representation of animals? Why don't you just eat tofu in cubes and vegetables and beans and not mock any of those fine animals? But anyway, so when it's sliced up and fried, it's mock chicken. Or if it's sliced up and or stuffed first with like ground up vegetables, that's mock duck. I don't know why the vegetables make it duck, but why would you mock duck? Ducks are such noble, great animals, not deserving of mocking. And duck meat is so delicious. And if we're talking about skin, I mean, what is better than duck skin? Duck skin is there's, you know, why eat Yuba if you can eat duck skin? It's so good when you get it crispy and crackling and, you know, their skin. It's funny, like, we don't like things that have the texture of skin, but we like skin. Now, I like Yuba, and I like other tofu products, but it's that whole idea of mock. Don't mock it. Just eat the real thing. Just eat both, especially the skin. Since we're on the subject of skin, I feel like it's time for people to stop taking the skin off of all their poultry. It's over, okay? The skin is the best part. There's more nutrition in the skin than in the meat. There's all kinds of useful stuff in there. There's all kinds of beneficial fatty acids. And the 90s are over. Fat phobia is over. We don't need to fear the fat anymore. All of that research about fat is total bullshit. We don't need to fear it anymore. You need to eat that fat. Just eat good quality animals, and then their fat will be good fat for you. And for God's sakes, eat the skin, damn it. That's my new motto. Eat the skin. So I just want to finish with a little funny side note. My friend Alexis, who actually was on this show a very long time ago, possibly one of the first episodes ever, the one I did about salt, I had her on because she is a salumi maker. Or was, then she had a baby. She's still a salumi maker. She posted this funny thing on Facebook last night. It was that came home from work to find Zoe, who's her baby daughter, asleep in her wetsuit. Mom thought it was her pajamas. So I thought that was hilarious. Picturing this little baby girl, she's probably two now, sleeping in a wetsuit. Especially considering that I had just come from this class and had all this, you know, wetsuits running through my head. I can't be too hard on her mom because her mom probably never had like little tiny wetsuits for her kids growing up. So she probably was a little confused about what were pajamas and what was a wetsuit. And maybe her mom just assumed that Alexis buys her kid Lycra or neoprene pajamas. I don't know. But I think by wetsuit, she meant like one of those little like surfer rash guard full body things that kids are supposed to wear now because kids aren't supposed to get any sun because the sun is so cruel to their skin. So you're supposed to cover your kids up completely at the beach. So I think that's what Zoe was wearing, not like a, you know, 3 millimeter thick neoprene scuba suit. But who knows? Maybe baby Zoe is also doing a triathlon and maybe she had been training and fell asleep. Who knows? I'll probably see her at the next triathlon and she'll probably finish before me. We're out of time. Thanks for listening. We will see you next week on Why We Cook. Thanks to Jack in the control room. Have a good night.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. All of the trade papers are just buzzing with the information that Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook, has decided that he is only going to eat food that he himself has killed, as in proteins. So thus far, he's killed a goat, a pig, a chicken, and some fish. But he's going to start hunting, he says, so that he can, you know, basically be more mindful of what he is putting in his mouth and into his body. And to quote a CNN Money article, he says, "This year, my personal challenge is around being thankful for the food I have to eat. I think many people forget that a living being has to die for you to eat meat. So my goal revolves around not letting myself forget that and being thankful for what I have. This year, I've basically become a vegetarian since the only meat I'm going to eat is from animals I've killed myself. And thus far, this has been a good experience. I'm eating a lot healthier foods, and I've learned a lot more about sustainable farming and the raising of animals." This has been Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Nicole Taylor is always the first to talk with new and exciting personalities in the food world on her show, Hot Grease. Check out a little clip.
Everything is super sweet in the Heritage Radio Network studios today. We're chatting with Fanny Gearson. Fanny is a graduate of the Culinary Institute of America and the 2011 James Beard Foundation Cookbook Award nominee. Oh my God, we fry in Bed-Stuy. We have to talk dough. Donuts. I'm going to have to say, Fanny, I don't know if you know this. I was definitely the first person in Brooklyn to start talking about it. Did you know that?
I knew that last time I saw you.
Ah.
But I didn't know that before.
So we have to talk dough. I mean, it is a bona fide phenomenon in Brooklyn.
I'm so excited to be part of it. I can't believe it.
You know? I mean, I was just telling you before the show that I think about a month ago, I went to dough on a Sunday at 2 o'clock and all the donuts
were gone.
You like
what you hear? You can hear Hot Grease every Monday at 3:30 p.m. live on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast or check it out in our archives.